We just hijacked a table here at the rooftop of one of the hotels.
Hey, Crafted listeners. We have a fun little bonus episode for you this week, recorded live on a rooftop in Austin during South by Southwest.
This is the Europe-themed house. Behind this hedge, there are a lot of really tall, good-looking people speaking Danish and et cetera. So, so that's where we are right now. Yeah, it's a good vibe here in Austin. And we're just going to talk about what we learned this week at South by Southwest.
This special Friday afternoon episode of Crafted is a quick and thoroughly uncomprehensive review of what four innovators learned during the craziness that is South by Southwest. Here's who I'm on the roof with.
Hi, I'm James Burdine. I'm the founder and principal at Bishop Linville. We're a branding and fractional CMO consultancy.
Hi, I'm Christy Nicholson. I'm an advisor on the program committee for South by Southwest, but my day job is a founder of the Studio for Communicating Complexity.
Hi, I'm Kwaku Anning. My day job is I'm the director for the Center of Innovation and Entrepreneurial Thinking, and I'm also the founder of Retrofuturism Consulting.
And I'm Dan Blumberg. I'm the host of Crafted, this here show about great products and the people who make them. The show is produced by my company, Modern Product Minds, where I also advise founders and makers on how to build and grow incredible products. Learn more and sign up for the Crafted newsletter at modernproductminds.com. Crafted is sponsored by Artium, a next-generation software development consultancy that combines elite human craftsmanship and artificial intelligence. See how Artium can help you build your future at artium.ai. Okay, back to South by Southwest, where it's always happy hour.
Kwaku, you got here first. You were here for the education conference.
Yeah.
What'd you figure out this week?
What I figured out is mostly about AI, and there's a lot of fear and excitement at the same time around what it is and how to use it. And all the educators I spoke to, they're like, this is great, but what do I do with it? And what do I know? How do I know that this is valuable, this is not valuable? What is real? What is just a sales pitch? There's maybe I think the overall term might be confusion.
That's right.
And excitement.
Yeah, at this point, I find that anyone who mentions AI doesn't go deep enough with examples or actual measurements. So then you end up just being afraid, still not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
So there was no clarity that you got from last?
I had clarity coming in, and I led a session or I co-led a session with my friends from the TFA Reinvention Lab. And that, we felt that the people left there with a lot of clarity, but a lot of the feedback that we got in that session was, oh, I've been to 2 to 3 other sessions. Here, I actually built something. I feel like I understand how I would use this. But otherwise, it felt like people were talking in platitudes or around what the potential of it was, but not the actual application within schools.
So what was the clarity? What was it that you built?
There's this amazing software called PlayLab, which is a nonprofit, and they give the software to teachers and students to use for free. And with this software, you can build your own LLM, large language model. This teacher has a side hustle where she leads bike tours to historically black landmarks in different cities, and then ends the tour with lunch at a black-owned business. And she's like, it normally plans me months to do this. And using PlayLab, she was able to do it in 15 minutes. And her mind was blown. She's like, well, what else could I be doing to augment what I do in the side hustle? And then she also applied it to her class. Lots of teachers who are giving state tests and they are not grading it, but they want to give kids time to practice with it and give them the experience of what that assessment looks like. They're like, oh, I could set this LLM up to grade this test in the way that it would normally be graded. So the kids get reps.
Very cool. You said there's a lot of concern and fear around AI, which is true like in every space.
Right.
So what's it specifically in education that you're...
As far as the fear?
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a level of where does teaching sit with AI? In other words, where does teaching end and where does AI begin? I'm sure there's some people who are like, wait a minute, is this going to take my job? And then there are other people who are just sort of like, all right, well, this is great. And it's simplifying a lot of the things that I don't love about teaching, grading, assessments in some other way, even coming up with the initial concepts that you would use, prompts within classes, or providing feedback. That was a thing that happened a lot where a lot of people are like, I want to give feedback to 40 kids instantaneously. I cannot do that. So that's the excitement piece. But I think there's also the, is this going to take my job? Which is kind of viable. And, you know, as we move into the talk around interactive, it's interesting to see the contrast about what people are worried about on the education side versus, I guess, the corporate design side, and also the similarities.
I happened to hear a panelist yesterday named Dre Wallace with a company called Opener that does touring and tour tickets for venues. She's also a longtime techno DJ, and she was talking about AI and for creators. And she made a very similar argument wherein if it reduces the high volume, low impact work she has to do, so much the better. If it helps her research to find the right bass tone for whatever it is she's building, that's great. But to build a bass line, to put together the music, absolutely not. And it's just, not only is it not there yet, but that would begin to diminish how she thought of herself as a creator. Mm-hmm. So it's just not dissimilar to when, for those folks, like when GarageBand came out and lots of other tools, where they suddenly had to get used to the tool and figure out what about it was going to make their high impact, low volume, like really impactful work that much more important.
I went to a talk here, right at this venue where we are a couple days ago. So there was basically like the chief technology officer of the city of Kelowna in British Columbia. And there was a panel conversation about the use of AI in cities and how it can be used to, one example that came up was like approve building permits instantaneously because they take photographs and you can see that this building is good, like approve and don't wait 3 months to do it. And in his city of Kelowna, he put it very pointedly. I was really shocked actually how he put it. He said, you know, city government is meant to be fiscally responsible. It is not meant to be an employer. And there are people that have bureaucrats that have left or maybe not taken a job in his city and have gone to the one next door because they just see more job security there. It was kind of striking how he put it.
What did you think was amazing about when you...
It's just a different perspective on politics and public life that I'm not used to living here, where people have these jobs for tens of years and it becomes something encased in glass. It's like you have this job and now you're a Polaroid, you're this person. And so it's also kind of refreshing, the idea of the constant influx of new ideas as a result of new people coming into roles.
Christy, you've come to South By many times. What's striking you this year?
I think the biggest thing, so I've been coming since 2008 or 2007. We're back, you know, back to levels that we saw before the pandemic. I know everyone keeps hearing that, but it's remarkable. So South by Southwest reopened in 2022, I believe. And it was, when we met. And we went to see Lizzo, for example. That would have been impossible. That would have been like, you needed a bracelet plus a magnet, mm-hmm. plus a line, mm-hmm. plus a God knows what, the QR code to get in. That time, Kwaku and I just sauntered in, and there was Lizzo, and we had a good time. So it was a South by Southwest that I had never experienced, because all of the content was there, all of the stars, all of the good shows, and yet you could move, there was space, you could get into everything you wanted, you could talk to a lot of people. It was wonderful. And not to say this year isn't wonderful, but when it grows and balloons to the size that it's at right now, where people are spending more time in their lines than they are in the rooms. They need to just figure out the logistics of that. But what I have seen that's amazing this year is also its size, which has led to incredible experiences outside the conference center in the houses that are branded, that have huge amounts of programming, tons of free food, free drink, and just the people that you get to meet. This year has been, for me, more about the people inside the conference, but a lot of people outside the conference too.
Yeah, totally. James, what is your first one? What struck you?
It is my first one. And I think the thing that struck me most, so I came here with the goal of sort of humbling myself and going to classes on something I like to think I know a lot about, which was a ton of fun. And what I loved seeing was the real focus on storytelling, particularly for brands, and getting away from, you know, companies defining themselves inside the context of compare and contrast, and really like, how do you tell story about what makes your company authentically impactful. The CMO, Andrea of Spanx, was fantastic on a panel, as was the CMO at Olipop, in just telling their story and how they had to move away from defining themselves because they were something completely different. They created brand new, entirely new ideas, entirely new constructs to operate in, and then watching that run. I think that's really stood out, and the Rohit Bergara non-obvious thinking was an absolutely fantastic exercise, as he sort of led the group through not only his outcomes and what he's done and his fantastic career, but here's my methodology. So it was very much a like expert talking about to practitioners and talking in a way of like, here's how you can do this too, here's how you can expand your work and your outcomes. But it's been great. It's been a great week.
I want to hear more about non-obvious thinking and how we can do that.
Sure. So they brand themselves as futurists and future thinkers and primarily trend spotters. So the idea is, what can you study in the culture? What signals or what signal mining, as we know some of our shared friends do a lot of work in that space. And how do you then blend what are signal mining efforts into seeing what's not readily apparent to other folks? Seth Godin did this, something similar 20 years ago with his purple cow. Are you actually seeing what's in front of you when it's happening in front of you? Or are you just looking for the things in the image that you already recognize and already know, and frankly already feel comfortable with? So a lot of this is about getting uncomfortable, moving, having some level of resilience to like have ideas, challenge your preconceived notions, and quite frankly, to unlock us from the pathways and solutions that have ended us up as sort of culturally, societally, in a lot of the very obvious problems we keep stumbling into.
That point that you raised about who we are versus who we can be.
Yes.
So I don't know if you guys remember Augusta from dinner the other night. She interviewed this guy, I think he writes for The Atlantic. But they were talking about social media and how we are entrenched within who we've declared ourselves to be at a young age, and that we can't move past that because there's all this documentation of who we are. And within that conversation, one of them brought up the point of it is hard for people to envision things that they haven't seen versus validating something that does exist that's new to them. And I think that tied into your point around the non-obvious thinking. But I think the point of that talk was, if you're trying to do something that's new and different and you feel it's going to form a trend, but you keep looking backwards to data to validate your thinking, you'll never find your answer. You need to just, if you believe in it and you see how it aligns with what's happening in the culture, you need to just do it.
The idea is like, how do you uncover insights to find unfamiliar stories? How do you keep leaning into the unfamiliar and what makes you uncomfortable?
What you were talking about, Kwaku, requires a huge amount. I mean, this idea of not having to look backwards and gather the data to buffer whatever new thought or new insight or even just a point of creative imagination. We need a much more open-minded world, and I don't think we're living in that right now. We're kind of converging. We're not in the divergent state. So I guess I'm feeling less than optimistic, and maybe you guys can help me feel more optimistic. I would also love more critical thinking and debate being taught in K through 6. And I believe it can happen, and it should be part of the curriculum.
So that was a whole other theme on the ed side, was mental health. Whether it be mental health of the teachers, of the students, we don't really talk about it, but the parents, because we're all parents here, and our kids make us crazy with worry or anything else. And I think that that's the counterweight to what Christy was just talking about. And I'm going to gush because I literally plan my entire interactive experience around Amy Webb's speech. And a lot of what she talked about was the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but also the idea of how, what did she call it? It was basically like the Internet of Things. All of these new pieces of technology that are actually collecting data about our decision-making to go from LLMs, large language models, to LAMs, large action models. And so, for instance, the Apple Vision Pro, the idea that you're wearing a computer on your face, and she talked about the fact that our eyes dilate about 5 to 10 seconds before an idea strikes, and being able to readily give up that data, like in our heads, as we're forming an idea.
My eyes are dilating right now as you're saying this. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. That's cool. And by the way, there are like 10 people wearing Vision Pros right behind us right now on this rooftop. Go on.
And so the idea, there's technology like this. There's all this other random technology that measures where you're moving, what kind of groceries you're buying, all of that, and being able to pull all of that data and put it into a large action model that will give you predictive things. Oh, it's, you know, we see light forms of it in our phone. It's 2:30. This is normally when you drive home, as opposed to it's 2:30. This is normally when you get up and get that matcha. I've pre-ordered it for you. My point is that kind of technology has to be balanced with mental health, because that drives us deeper into our silos, because we don't have to think anymore and we aren't challenged anymore. So I'm hoping, to your point about wanting to create a positive spin on it, the idea of the focus on mental health will create a counterweight to us going into these bubbles of automation where we don't have to think, because the theory is like, oh, we'll think about things that are better and bigger and be more ethereal. But the reality of it is that we'll watch more Netflix, it feels like.
One of the things I think is interesting in what Kwaku is saying is you know, part of this is, I wonder if we're in 5 years from now at South by Southwest, there's going to be a yearning for imprecision, for lack of a better term, wherein you know, so much of the data now is precise. We are more and more, you know, geolocated, mm-hmm. your pre-ordered matcha or whatever the case may be. And I wonder if we're going to go in the other direction. We'll have founders and technologists figuring out how to be imprecise, mm-hmm. how to let you just wander the, you know, wander the grid or whatever the case may be. That I find interesting. And also, I suppose it's a secondary point, but there's a real need to create space for new ideas. Yeah. And while that kind of automation essentially frees you up from the high volume, low impact, taking time to pre-order your thing, it also means you don't wait in line and get bored and have to let your mind wander and talk to the person next to you. And that, to me, going all the way back to what we were saying at the top, is like, how do we re-engage and leverage technology in society to, you know, be better humans?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. How could technology leverage this city and the wide open spaces that we never see at this conference to provide that counterweight or that antidote to the automation that we're talking about?
What you were just saying was making me think of, I've worked on a lot of like personalization technologies, and there's two things. There's explore and there's exploit. And so, you know, if you learn exactly what someone wants, then you're exploiting that. Oh, you listen to, you know, Nirvana, here's Pearl Jam. Right. I don't know why I'm thinking grunge right now. I'm not even a big grunge guy. But then there's explore of like, here, try this. It's totally different. And, right. and Spotify, you know, you talk about like helping you explore a city. Spotify is kind of a city in its own way of like helping you explore everything in there. And, you know, do you get into a filter bubble? And I think they're actually quite good, I think, at highlighting stuff. But you can easily get sucked into one genre or one, you know, type of food or whatever. So I think it's, there's a lot of interesting technology, not just around cities, just around helping you discover different things. But also, you know, sometimes you want to just go to your neighborhood joint, play the favorites.
The interesting thing, too, I'll say a couple of things. So Hugh Forrest, who's the head of South by Southwest Interactive, mm-hmm. and he may actually be the head of all programming now. He's been just an anchor for South by Southwest. I have a huge amount of respect for him. And he always says in his opening introduction of how to navigate the conference, and he also says this over and over again, South by Southwest should always be done that you should just walk into a room that you don't even know what's going to be behind the door. Mm. Just randomly move your finger, put it on one of the talks and say, I'm going to go there. Throw yourself very far away. Now, people, unfortunately, we are scared of the unfamiliar, very naturally, and probably because that was a safety thing for us, and it probably still is. So people need a huge amount of direction. I don't want to use the word forcing, but they need a lot of guidance. And so I think that you're right. Some form of maybe technology or maybe something where you're paired up, like we do at PopTech, yep. the PopTech Institute and the conference there in D.C., we have randomized lunches, or we used to do this, where we would pair people up. So you didn't have to walk in a room and find yourself. But it requires that, otherwise it's going to be a flop. Yeah.
I totally agree with that advice of go to random stuff at South By. Most of the panels end up being at more or less a 101, 102 level if you know the subject already. Yeah. So when I go to conferences, I go to conferences just to meet people. It's not necessarily to learn per se. I learn a lot when I'm there. But it is, for me, always more fun to go to stuff that I know nothing about, because then it opens my mind, my eyes dilate and all that.
I'm going to tie this back to the Amy Webb conversations. I mean, I advise everyone watch this talk either through the app or when it comes out on YouTube. So the idea of growing basically chips for LLMs using brain matter, the idea that chips are going to become the real commodity within this AI space due to Moore's Law, we are running out of space on the chips to speed them up. And the idea of using brain matter to do that. And there was a company that she describes in her talk that did a really loose version of this. But right after her talk, I went to an AI talk about the arts. And one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, a famous musician passes away. I don't want this to happen to someone like Stevie Wonder, and being able to build a large music model based upon his brain tissue. Like the possibilities of what's happening, especially the way these spaces are converging, the physical and the digital, is really astounding.
Wow. I mean, quantum computing is going to take care of some of the Moore's Law problem. You know, Moore's Law is the amount of computing power on a chip, and it's basically doubled every year since mm-hmm. 1968. That's what's caused us to, you know, go from room-sized computers to the tiny little ones, and the price drops right down. The issue is that ones and zeros are going through, and suddenly it's getting thinner and thinner and thinner, almost like seen through a thin waterfall. Mm-hmm. The ones and zeros will never be distinct anymore, and that's the problem.
Here's the hot goss. One of the volunteers mentioned, he's like, oh yeah, they're tearing down the convention center. And then I spoke to someone else at the conference, and he explained to me that after next year, they're going to tear down the convention center and build up a new one that's even bigger and taller. And if you've been to Austin, you will see that everything here keeps getting taller. And so for 5 years, there will be no convention center. They haven't quite figured out what they're going to do. They have a whole other year until it's closed. But how does that change what this conference is if you don't have the grounding of that physical space? I orient myself in the city by the convention center. And I'm sure there'll be a site, a construction site, but it is really integral to the conference. And so that to me is really interesting, how South By will evolve as a result of that.
I think we go into the ranch country and it becomes Burning Man or something. Is that what happens? Speaking of psychedelics?
Maybe. Yeah, we'll go up into the hills. Somewhere out into the desert. We're in Texas.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, though, about, you know, this city is getting taller and taller. At one point, we were together a couple nights ago. I looked up and just started counting the number of cranes.
Yeah.
Like, just in one little corner of the sky, I saw eight different cranes on, you know, new skyscrapers going up. It reminds me of what the Brooklyn Queens waterfront did the last, like, 10, 15 years. It looks completely different than it did. I grew up facing the Queens waterfront. I grew up on Roosevelt Island, so I could see it out my window, and there was nothing. There was one tall building. It was City's building. It was the tallest building between Manhattan and Boston forever, and now it's just there's a whole city in Austin. It reminds me of that. Our cab driver the other night was saying what a boom town it is right now.
This idea is striking me of, like, Austin being this catalyst for transformation and is now almost going through this postmodern moment of, we were driving in today and watching there's a stadium being torn down, and Dan was saying, used to, these would just get dynamited and poof, it's gone. Mm-hmm. Whereas this one is being quite literally deconstructed as you drive along the freeway, and you can see that, you know, where they're taking walls out and taking the structure out. And it just makes me think that that's a metaphor for what you've just described that the conference is going to do, wherein the from a proximity perspective, from a how do we locate ourselves. And I just wonder what new and different experiences will happen from that, because we're going to have to get unfamiliar. We're going to have to walk the other side of Congress. We're going to have to walk the other side of Los Brazos and La Vaca and all the other streets and, like, keep expanding out into the city. Or maybe we do get to go to Hill Country. That'd be fun,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But we get to be uncomfortable to what you were saying about Hugh Forest, where we get to do the thing that we come here. We know where we are. We know where the coffee place is. You know where you can get your scooter. All that's going to change, which means maybe you're bumping into different people as well as you're struggling through that experience. I think that's great.
Yeah, that's great. A way to force it. And it wasn't necessarily technology. It's just like, let's just blow up the building and then see where they have to go. That'd be great. I'm in.
Yeah. No, that arena, I think it's a University of Texas arena, is being deconstructed. The way you put it, it makes me think of, like, modernist food, you know, like a dish that's been, is it deconstructed? What's the word they use when they take a burger, but then it's like they...
Oh, yeah, it's deconstructed. Like the Wiley Dufresne kind of thing. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yes. And then you throw some, like, foam on top, and then you charge, like, you know, $75 for it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what next year's conference is. So now I'm even more excited for next year. This is my first time back here. I was here 3 years in a row, but I haven't been here in 12 years. And so now you're telling me next year's going to be totally different, and I can't wait to come back. I imagine y'all will be here as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be back as well. And as we are having this conversation, I'm excited. Like, the idea of this moving out into the city is one of the hallmarks and the tenets of hands-on education and experiential learning. Like, what if we just keep experiencing new things and, you know, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable and the unfamiliar?
Well, I hope you got comfortable with that uncomfortable and unfamiliar episode of Crafted with me and my friends and fellow innovators James Burdine, Kwaku Aning, and Christy Nicholson. I'll be back soon with more stories about great products and the people who make them. Also, Christy and I co-led a session at South by Southwest on new frontiers in health. We interviewed two biotech VCs about how AI, psychedelics, and the gut-brain axis are leading to new therapies in mental health. Plus, we discuss what's real and what's overhyped. Subscribe to Crafted and you'll hear that episode soon. And one quick correction, after our rooftop conversation, I did some more research, and the construction and $1.6 billion redevelopment of the Austin Convention Center will begin after next year's South by Southwest. But once it starts, it'll take a few years before the new convention center, which will be twice the size of today's, will be ready to host us all again. In the meantime, from 2026 to 2030 or so, South by will, as we just discussed, be distributed around Austin even more so than it is today. Crafted is produced by my company, Modern Product Minds, where I also advise founders and makers on how to build and grow incredible products. Learn more and sign up for the Crafted newsletter and get episode alerts and tips on how you can build incredible products at modernproductminds.com. Crafted is sponsored by Artium, a next-generation software development consultancy that combines elite human craftsmanship and artificial intelligence. See how Artium can help you build your future at artium.ai. Hope you enjoyed this special happy hour edition of Crafted.
Our eyes dilate about 5 to 10 seconds before an idea strikes.
My eyes are dilating right now as you're saying this, as I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. That's cool.